You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Raina Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from The Athletic, coming to you from LaGuardia Airport. I am joined by Sam Jam Packard the Great, formerly of WEEI. Why am I in New York? That's a good question. I'm flying from Boston to Cleveland. I'm stuck here in New York for several hours. So if you hear some announcements going on in the background, if you hear people walking by me, that's why. Many apologies for the audio quality, which will not be quality.
The fine people who listen to our podcast are plenty used to terrible audio quality after there was just a jackhammer going last night at the Garden.
Yeah, those jackhammers can be tough to deal with. Some of the photoshops are great, though. I think it was well worth listening to a jackhammer so that you could then see the photoshops on Twitter afterwards.
It's been fully we've put it into our brand, and now it's just kind of expected. But, Jay, I'm kind of upset. Normally, Thursdays, we chilling on the rooftop. Right now, I'm indoors in my office, and you're in LaGuardia. It's considerably worse. I like the rooftop chilling, but I guess going to Cleveland is more important.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I have a job to do, and it's keeping me from the roof deck, keeping me from hanging on the roof deck. But Celtics are up 3-2, Eastern Conference Finals. They have a chance, two chances to reach the NBA Finals. We have reached a point where I don't think any of us expected the Celtics to reach this season. After Kyrie went down, obviously after Hayward went down, they're one win away from ending LeBron James's final streak. I mean, when you think about all this team has accomplished, it really is kind of crazy that this team, without probably their two best players, at least two of their three best players, has a chance to finally boot LeBron James out of the Eastern Conference playoffs before he gets to the finals. It's crazy.
Well, what do you think of LeBron James, specifically his performance last night? Because all the talk was he was tired. I don't know about that. He seems to be a professional basketball player, doesn't really get tired, but his effort wasn't there, and he had a lot of kind of uncharacteristic turnovers. And the Celtics played phenomenal defense, but they didn't shoot the ball well. I think you tweeted out the stat. They were like the first team to win a conference finals game shooting under 37% since the 04 Pistons. So it's not like the Celtics were shooting the lights out. This was really just the Cavs did not play that well, and the Celtics played some smothering defense. But what do you think of, I guess, the Cavs' performance and then LeBron's performance as well?
I think the one stat that stands out to me is over the last three halves, LeBron has 5 assists versus 11 turnovers. And obviously, he's one of the best playmakers ever, especially for his size. Obviously, you know, he's been averaging damn near 30-point triple-doubles, sometimes even more than that, in the playoffs for God knows how many years. And so when you hold him to 5 assists over 3 halves and 11 turnovers, you're doing an incredible job on his teammates. And I do think there was something to the fact that he was tired in the second half. I do think that he has to carry a bigger load now than probably he has since he was in Cleveland the first time. I mean, you think about the team he's taken to the finals. It's been Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving or Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. You know, there was that one year when Love got hurt and then Kyrie got hurt in the finals, and LeBron was kind of doing it on his own. But this feels like the worst supporting cast he's had in a long time. And he's the only primary playmaker they have. There's just not anybody else to break down a defense, not anybody else to make a shot for them. And I do think the toll of that weighs on him. And I think the Celtics have just done a masterful job on his teammates. And that kind of wore the Cavaliers down, I felt, in game five. And I thought we saw that kind of start in the second half of game four. If you look back at game four, and obviously it was out of hand most of the game. Celtics could never get over the hump to even get to the hump. I think that was what Danger Carr tweeted. Great tweet. But even in that second half, I think he had 22 points. And the rest of his teammates had 21 points on 8 of 25 shooting. And so you look back to that half, and then you look to game five, and the Celtics have just cut off everyone else. Nobody else is hurting them whatsoever except a quick spurt where Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance hurt them in game five. It's like they're okay with LeBron getting big point totals. And obviously he didn't do that in game five. You know, he kind of slowed down as the game progressed. And their defense was just awesome.
So what was the solution? Is it just Aaron Baines being a bigger guy in the middle and clogging up the paint? Was it like kind of the scramble switches so they didn't like have Rozier and going on LeBron one-on-one? Because it really feels, you're right, ever since the first quarter of game four, it felt like the Celtics have, I don't want to say figured it out defensively, but seriously slowed down the Cavs, and where really no one showed up in game five other than LeBron James and for a few minutes. I think Kevin Love had a decent first quarter, but is it just the fact that there's big bodies and they're limiting his drives? That's something they did pretty well in games one and two, less so in games three. Is it just Baines is a burly boy and you like LeBron doesn't want to go up against him at the rim?
I think part of it is, yes, they're big. And at times in that game five, they were huge. Like, they had Marcus Smart at point guard next to Marcus Morris. Who was it? Brown, Horford, and
Tatum,
and
I
Baines?
Think.
Like that. Yeah, whoever it was, like, they were all 6'8", except for Marcus Smart, who might as well.
Who plays like he's 7'8".
You know? And so they were just huge, huge, huge a lot of the time. And I think that makes an impact. I think another thing is, you know, they didn't play Korver in the first quarter. They didn't play him in the third quarter. That was a strange, strange, strange substitution. But when he's not in the game, the Cavs have one shooter, two shooters, Kevin Love and J.R. Smith, around LeBron. And I think, you know, George Hill, the Celtics aren't too worried about him shooting. They're certainly not worried about Tristan Thompson getting touches. And I think we've seen over the last few years, like, the best way to maximize LeBron is to put three or four shooters around him, and the Cavs just don't have the personnel to do that, especially when they're going big. And so I think their roster has issues, and you know, some teams can't expose those issues. I think the Celtics are uniquely equipped to, first of all, have a lot of bodies to guard James, but part of that too is when you're switching on to Kevin Love, when you're switching Jaylen Brown or Marcus Morris or Tatum, even, you're not, that's not a matchup you're too concerned about. Like, those aren't always mismatches in favor of the Cavs. So a lot of the plays that the Cavs have run to get mismatches in the past, it doesn't work against Boston because they just have so many similar defenders. Now, obviously, the Cavs played a lot better at home, and they're going back to Cleveland, and Boston needs to stay just as connected and do all the same stuff they did against Korver and Smith and Love after the first quarter. But it was a powerhouse game five performance from the Celtics defense. And then the offensive rebound, I mean, three offensive rebounds for a team with Tristan Thompson in the entire game. That's the lowest the Cavs have had in this postseason. And it was just really, really impressive by the Celtics.
Do you think they
especially
take
when Cavs were missing so many shots?
Do you think they take Tristan Thompson off the floor to try and get their offense going and surround LeBron with more shooters and give him more spacing? Or do you think that there's like too much of a risk there just because the Cavs don't have anyone who can really guard Al Horford in that scenario?
I think the Horford issue would loom as a really big issue. And that's the thing with the Celtics defense, is like they can always have five guys who guard you, whereas Horford has just been an issue for teams that try to go big, or in this case, which is just weird. It's a weird thing. When the Cavs go smaller, they're more susceptible to Horford beating them on the outside, because then it's Kevin Love who has to guard him. Maybe you have, Love guard, like, Marcus Morris or somebody, and LeBron guard Horford if you do that. But
I think that's favorable for the Celtics, because then you're going to have basically Jaylen Brown against Kyle Korver. And Jaylen Brown seems like he's personally insulted every single time that Kyle Korver tries to defend him.
Sometimes to the detriment of the Celtics.
Oh, very much. My brother texted me during the game and he goes, "Juice drives are yikes right now." He was like, I don't know what. He got a bit of the Jason Tatum and just could not like go up strong and had a number of turnovers. But generally, you would think that's a plus for the Celtics. And I think Jason Tatum figured out in game four that J.R. Smith can't guard him or should not be able to guard him. And he was very aggressive. And J.R. Smith had five fouls. The Cavs got into foul trouble kind of early in the third quarter. I think Tatum figured out, was like, oh, I should just be attacking constantly and getting to the line. So I don't, like, the Cavs defense is already suspect. Taking Tristan Thompson off the floor makes their defense that much worse. So I don't know. It's you know what I want to say. This is like the exact same feeling I had after game two.
You already said it two games ago. But look, these teams have been drastically different home and road. If the Cavs go back to Cleveland and take game six, then everyone in Boston is going to be petrified of LeBron James in a game seven. That's just what it's going to be. And so maybe the Celtics have figured some things out. But one thing that stood out to me on the tape was they're kind of, they almost seems to use Al Horford as a decoy sometimes. The Cavs are so intent on keeping Tristan Thompson on Horford's body that when they run pick and rolls with Horford, sometimes the ball handler is just wide open. And Tatum got a few shots from Horford's screens. Rozier had some open ones. He didn't always make them, but he rarely made them. It was
a tough night.
Tough shooting night for Terry Rozier. But the Celtics, they were definitely able to create shots because the Cavs are so focused on Horford. And he kind of has that gravity right now where they're just really afraid of him. And it's opening things up for everybody else. The Celtics did not shoot well. Like, they didn't shoot. They were 0-for-7 from the corners. They were, I believe, 11-for-27 at the rim. Some of their finishing has just been dreadful in this series. It's disgusting. Like, they're just missing wide open shots. But if their defense can stay as intact as it did in game five, they have to be confident no matter what moving forward.
Do you think they can pull it off in Cleveland? Like, I really don't understand the home and road stuff. Like, I can understand there's, like, some psychology about that, about, like, positive psychology. If everyone's cheering your shot, you're going to, like, have it go in. But I guess the Celtics offense wasn't that much better at home in Game 5. But just, it's kind of bizarre that they're undefeated at home and only have one win on the road for this entire playoffs. Like, it just, no, like, it seems like they're incapable of having a good shooting performance on the road. And Brad was asked about it, and he didn't have a great explanation for why it is, and it's just kind of befuddling, because it doesn't seem like that's, like we've seen in the Western Conference Finals, like that's just not a thing that happens to other teams. And I saw, I think Danger Card tweeted out today, there's been like four series where the home team has won every game, and it's gone seven games, and the Celtics have been involved in all four of them.
Yeah,
so is there like something magic about the Boston Garden, or is it just the organization? I don't know. It's confusing.
I think this matchup might be a little home. It might lend itself to the home court swing, because the Celtics are super young, and maybe that doesn't matter all the time. Maybe it matters more home on the road. I don't really know. And I think the Cavs, like, for all the experience they have at the top, they got a lot of guys who have never really been there in big playoff moments. Whether it's Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance, Jeff Green has never really been deep in the playoffs. Has he? I don't think he has.
I'd be shocked if he was.
Yeah, so they have a lot of guys too. Like, with the exception of their starting five, everybody who comes off the bench is new to this, and they've never been in it before. So maybe that's why the swings are so fierce. I don't really know. It's been just ridiculous over the first five games. Like, each team is just a totally different beast, home and the road. It's weird to even talk about, because I don't think anyone has a good answer for it. Like it's just what it is right now. And maybe the Celtics can buck that trend. Maybe they can carry over their defense, and maybe they can knock down a few shots. But it is kind of startling how different the teams have been depending on the venue.
Yeah, it really makes no sense. But, like, I feel like the momentum of that game, I don't know if it was LeBron was not trying, but they're, I don't know, it's kind of weird that it seems like whoever wins the first quarter will go on to win the game, and there's just like the Celtics offense is so inept, and the Celtics defense is also so great that the Cavs struggle to score, that just whoever gets a big lead first was just going to hold on to it. Like, there was no, we say basketball is a game of runs, but like in the fourth quarter it was a game of just nobody scoring. Like, there was no run whatsoever. The Cavs couldn't make a comeback. The Celtics were willing them. The Celtics missed, like, four shots in a row. More than that, like, it felt like eight shots in a row, half of them being Marcus Smart threes or Terry Rozier, like, threes. I don't know. It's just, like, did the Celtics just have to win the first quarter?
I mean, winning the first quarter would be nice.
It's a good start. A good way to start is to start by winning.
Yeah. I'm still just befuddled, bamboozled, whatever you want to say, about the Kyle Korver thing.
Did you laugh out loud when Ty Lue said that quote about Semi Ojeleye?
I just kind of sat there like, did I just hear what I think I said? What I think I heard? Did Ty Lue just say that? Like, okay, I understand Kyle Korver can have some bad matchups if the Celtics go to just seven guys, because guarding Marcus Smart around pick and rolls is tough for him. Guarding Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown is tough for him. Marcus Morris will post him up. Like, the Celtics, when they go to those seven guys, they have a lot of matchup difficulties for Korver. So what? He's been their third best player. He's shot like 65% from the field. His catch-and-shoot numbers in this playoffs have been totally insane. They need his threat. Like, they're not going to score if Kyle Korver only plays 9 minutes and a half and doesn't play in quarters. This isn't the Cleveland teams of the past where they could get away with sidelining some shooting because everyone else can shoot. It's not like that anymore. And so I was totally stunned that Korver played as little as he did. And then Ty Lue's explanation, I don't know whether that was the real explanation.
But why say something that sounds so stupid? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't see how the two guys are connected. I don't even, like I was saying this last night with John, I don't remember Semi, like, running around screens trying to track down Korver. And I don't remember any situations where Korver was guarding Semi, maybe just because Shemmy's such a not an offensive threat that you just kind of don't focus on his matchup. But I just didn't understand how the two are connected.
Yeah, it threw me for a loop. It really did. It threw me for a loop. So that was a stunner. I think we'll see more Korver in game six. I think the Cavs have to go to him. Like, who cares if Semi Ojeleye isn't going to play? He's been easily their third best player in this series. I mean, you could argue Tristan Thompson, I guess, for his rebounding and defense on Al Horford. But Korver has been phenomenal. And he's blocked shots. Jaylen Brown has attacked him at times successfully. But a lot of the times, like, those attacks don't end well for the Celtics. So
yeah, it's not even like Korver has been a liability on defense. I think he's held his own, and like he's definitely probably one of the Cavs' smarter players and is like better at communicating. I think he's preferable if I'm the Cavs than like any, like Jordan Clarkson saw way too much time. If I was a Cavs fan, it just doesn't make any sense to me, man. It's very confusing.
Yeah, Yeah, but that one was weird. Because he's what makes them so tough to guard. Like, if you don't have him flying around screens, and Kevin Love spacing the court, and those two guys working their two-man magic, and Korver flying around, coming off handoffs and spotting up to space the court for LeBron, the Cavs are a lot easier to guard. So that one, I just did not get that. That was, I mean, who would have thought that all you had to do to get Kyle Korver out of the game was just sit Semi Ojeleye? Like, Brad would have done that earlier in the series if he knew.
Well, he didn't play Semi Ojeleye, so maybe Brad did know that. Like, I feel like we have to give him some credit. There's a reason the rotation definitely shortened from 8 guys to 7 guys in game 5. Maybe Brad's just a genius.
I think part of that was they started big, so they didn't have to play 4 perimeter guys at the start. And if you start with 4 perimeter guys and you're playing that as your starting lineup, then you stretch those guys really thin to try to stay small. And so going big, giving Baines a lot of minutes, allowed Brad to give the perimeter guys manageable minutes. And I think that's what allowed him more than anything else to cut Ojeleye out of the rotation entirely. Now, I mean, if foul trouble happens, if anything happens, they could turn to Ojeleye again. But it was weird that Lou listed Ojeleye as the trigger for Korver not playing. One of the weirdest things I've heard a coach say, I feel like, in a post-game press conference.
And he got properly roasted for it on Twitter, so that was a fun experience.
My mentions were on fire, totally on fire. I enjoyed all the people who tweeted at me, so thank you guys. Appreciate you.
I feel like we've beaten the analysis to death, and we're kind of going into Game 6 saying the Celtics have a formula, but you know they still have LeBron James. So the only other thing I wanted to talk about on today's show was the all-NBA teams were released today, and there were no Boston Celtics. Al Horford, who I thought was deserving of at least an all-NBA third team, not on the list. And actually, Kyrie Irving ended up getting more votes than Al Horford did, which kind of seems nonsensical to me because...
Also, Ben Simmons did.
Yes, that was insulting because that guy is a coward. What was your reaction to seeing the all NBA teams? I mean, once it came out, there aren't huge arguments. All the players who kind of made it, I guess, instead of Horford, had pretty good years. It's like you're looking at either him making it over Paul George or Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, so I think you could argue that, look, Karl Towns has better traditional stats than Al Horford. I think it's certainly an argument as to whether Al Horford is actually the more impactful player. And I think, especially as these playoffs go on, and obviously it's not a playoff award. Obviously it's about the regular season. But just his lack of weaknesses is a huge deal for the Celtics. And it gives them the malleability. And so, to me, Horford deserved it. I think he had a better year than Karl Towns as far as impacting winning goes. I think... He had probably a better year than Joel Embiid. When you're getting to that level, it's so close. And all those guys are deserving. So, and then the Kyrie would have made it. Kyrie, I think, would have certainly been on one of the three teams had he stayed healthy. So that was just bad luck that he missed the last month plus of the season. So I don't know if you have any like real qualms, but Horford's a guy to me that should have been on there. He was healthy all season. He was the best defender on the league's best defense.
Oh, say that again for me.
He was the best defender on the league's best defense. He was the key to their offense too, especially once Kyrie got hurt. Even before then, he's obviously one of the guys who makes them run. So he's so good. I think in a lot of these awards, I think defense is often the thing people value the worst. And so like Karl Towns, he's not a good defender. Now, he puts up better points. He's going to average more rebounds than Al Horford. But when you put it all together, Horford did more to help the Celtics win this year, I think, than Karl Towns did. And I don't think we've gotten to the point yet where everybody understands exactly what impacts winning. I think this Celtics team especially has people confused because part of their value is having eight or nine guys that are all plus defenders and that can switch and are versatile. And Horford keys all of that. He's the piece that allows them to go big or small and match up with Giannis and match up with Ben Simmons. And now, you know, sometimes he switches over to LeBron James, or other times he has to guard Korver at the perimeter, or he's fighting off Tristan Thompson down low. He just does so many things for them. And so I think he certainly had an argument, but Karl Towns and Joel Embiid, those guys are great players too.
The thing that's, I guess, I find frustrating about that is that, like, yes, Horford doesn't have the traditional counting stats. So if you're not watching a bunch of Celtics games, say you're a local radio personality who really likes baseball, it makes sense. You have a kind of a built-in excuse for why you just don't give Horford the proper respect. But when it's all NBA awards and it's people who are supposed to be NBA experts who actually follow the league closely, for them to also rely on counting stats is more disappointing. I mean, it makes sense if you don't watch, like, it's very hard to basically watch every single team every single night. And so if you're just a beat reporter for another team, of course you're probably, like, going by statistics makes the most sense. But you would hope that, like, kind of the more informed NBA watcher, someone who actually, like, kind of cares about the game and understands the game, would understand Horford's impact more. But I think he's just the victim.
Look, I agree, but also, like, Joel Embiid and Karl Towns, those guys are great players too. And so it's
I know,
like,
Jay, but I'm being a homer.
So I'm just saying, I would take him this. I would have taken him this season. I think he was a better player this season than Karl Towns and Joel Embiid. Like, if you need to win a series, I think you take Al Horford. Was he better throughout the regular season? It was probably close. The second half of the season, I don't think he was as good as he was during the first half. That probably hurt him in the voters' eyes. And those two other guys are great. So it's tough. It's tough to make an All-NBA team. And he certainly had a case, but it wasn't like the biggest snub ever.
No, there should be no real outrage. Well, there should be no outrage whatsoever about awards because they don't really matter that much, except now they do with related to contracts.
The Embiid one mattered a lot. If he had gotten first team, he would have gotten the 30% max, but now he's getting the 25.
And then Anthony Davis, he locked in his super max as well.
Yup. That man's going to have the most ginormous contract in the history of the NBA.
Yeah, well, I don't want to hear any Celtics trade proposals for him because they are one game away from the NBA Finals, and they don't have Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward. People just love trades. I think every day in, like, the Reigning Jays hashtag, there's a suggestion of, like, either a trade for Anthony Davis, a trade for Kawhi Leonard, or, like, some way to trade Rozier and a pick to, like, try and move up in this year's draft. People just love trades. I don't understand it.
Yeah, people do love trades. Fake trades are huge, man. I wish I was better at fake trades.
No, I think we were talking about this in the locker room before the game yesterday. The beauty of the Reigning Jays podcast is that we're not take artists. We don't come out there in strong takes. We embrace nuance, and we're not just gonna just yell opinions. We're gonna try and break it down. So the fake trades, it's just hot takery. And so I'm gonna pat ourselves on the back and say, we're going to give you a more thorough explanation of what's actually going on, and rather than just screaming into a microphone. Although, I'm kind of just screaming into a microphone right now.
Oh, yeah, screaming into a microphone works. And I think I screamed into a microphone the first time someone brought up the exact trade the Celtics made for Kyrie Irving. I think I was at the time very against it. So, shouts to me for being a stupid microphone shouter.
I think we have to wrap it up there. I think that's what we've come to a conclusion.
Yeah, so we are the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you don't subscribe to us, you're stupid, just like I am. We are the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast. We are the greatest Celtics podcast ever. And here I am in LaGuardia Airport, ready to end this damn podcast. God bless you all.
Kaizen. Yeah, J. King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.